Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, January 3rd. Affidavits say teen killed following drug deal. Marijuana was taken from victim before one of the suspects allegedly shot him. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. Arrest affidavits for the five teens charged in connection with another teen's death indicate he was shot multiple times while selling marijuana. Robert Duncan, age 17, was reported missing by his mother, Silver Knock, on Friday, the affidavit state. The Midland County Sheriff's Office and Texas Department of Public Safety began searching a field at County Road 1230 on Monday after receiving new information from witnesses. Duncan's body was found in the field the following day. Zayden Hayes, age 18, and Larry West, age 17, have been charged with capital murder in Duncan's death. West's affidavit states he and two of the other individuals charged, Hayes and Rogelio Cadena, age 18, arranged to purchase marijuana from Duncan. However, the three teens used two firearms to steal the marijuana and attempted to flee the scene, their affidavit state. Hayes was identified in the affidavits as the one who shot Duncan and caused his death. Cadena provided Hayes with a firearm to steal the marijuana from Duncan, the affidavit state. Cadena has been charged with murder. According to the affidavits, West was given the marijuana and attempted to run away. Duncan chased after West and was then confronted by Hayes, who shot him. The teens left Duncan's body at the location where he was shot and returned to Cadena's home, the affidavit state. Rogelio Vasquez, age 18, has been charged with tampering with evidence. He allegedly buried the firearms used in Duncan's shooting, according to his affidavit. A fifth suspect, John Hayes, age 17, has been charged with interfering with public duties. He was arrested before Duncan's body was found for allegedly withholding information from investigators, his affidavit states. The arrest affidavits state the Midland Police Department began searching the field on County Road 1230 after witnesses indicated that location was the area where Duncan was shot during a drug deal. These witnesses first told investigators Duncan was fine, but later recanted their original stories, the affidavits state. It is unclear from the affidavits if these witnesses are the suspects or other individuals. Zayden Hayes, West, and Cadena are being held on $1.5 million bonds. Vasquez is being held on a $150,000 bond. John Hayes is no longer being held at the Midland County Jail, according to the Midland County Sheriff's Office website. A&M Center says number of homes sold in Midland County drops. Average price increases in November. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The number of homes sold inside Midland County during the month of November dropped under 200 for the first time since February and was 41 fewer than November 2018, according to the Texas A&M Real Estate Center. It remains to be seen if the number of homes sold means that the housing market is becoming more normal. The 225 homes sold in November 2018 marked the only November this decade when 200 or more homes were sold. And while fewer homes were sold in November, 55 fewer than October, for example, the average price for a home sold jumped to $356,000, the most for any month going back to July, and nearly $25,000 more than November 2018. The median price for a home sold was $307,000, which was an increase of $23,000 year over year. The number of homes on the market at the end of the month dropped from 700 to 630. While there is less supply, historical trends going back to at least 2015 show it is normal that the number of homes on the market drops from October to November. The 630 homes on the market is also the most at the end of a November, going back to at least 2015. The Reporter-Telegram has not yet received November numbers from the Permian Basin Board of Realtors. Gas price averages jump in Midland across state. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The average price of gas in the larger metropolitan areas in Texas jumped over the New Year's holiday. That included Midland, where the average increased by 9 cents, according to AAA Texas. Midland was set to take over the top spot for the highest average in the state at $2.49 a gallon for regular unleaded, according to the organization, but the average in El Paso vaulted 27 cents to $2.56. The price hike in Midland was one of the largest in the state and 2 cents higher than the state average, 7 cents. AAA Texas reported Odessa came into the week with the highest average, $2.45, but the average increased 2 cents, around 22% of the increase experienced during the same time in Midland, according to AAA Texas. AAA Texas reported this week that a year-end spike in road trip travel because of the holidays helped to push the national average higher on the week. Several states, including Texas, saw gas prices increase in the last week. However, market analysts suggest spikes in gas prices should be short-lived, according to the organization. Quote, gas prices across the state increased after a record amount of travel volume for the year-end holiday period, stated Joshua Zuber, AAA Texas spokesman, in an email. Continuing the quote, however, market analysts suggest gas prices could decrease following the holidays, end quote. AAA Texas reported the following average prices across the region. $2.21 in Lubbock, an increase of 2 cents. $2.20 in Amarillo, an increase of 1 cent. $2.32 in San Angelo, an increase of 6 cents. And $2.36 in Abilene, an increase of 7 cents. Drivers in Midland also paid an average of $2.49 for gas 1 year ago. That also was the highest price in the state. Midland was the lone area in the largest metropolitan areas in the state not paying more for gas year over year. Odessa hospitals announced first babies. The first baby for 2020 at Medical Center Hospital was born at 1:05 a.m. New Year's Day, while the first baby born at Odessa Regional Medical Center arrived at 3:42 a.m. Alexandria Michelle, the first child of Jennifer Polanco and Isaac Ojeda, weighed 6 pounds 10 ounces, according to an MCH Facebook post. MCH and Children's Miracle Network presented the family with a car seat, stroller, playset, diapers, and wipes. The couple also received the first Power Bag, an initiative of Education Partnership of the Permian Basin to promote early literacy for children in Ector County. Madeline Nicole Bishop is the daughter of Jessica Taylor and Trey Bishop, according to an ORMC Facebook post, her family also received a power bag. To learn more about power bags, visit powerbag.org. Second person sought in shooting death. Midland authorities have issued an arrest warrant for an 18-year-old man in connection with a shooting death that occurred Saturday afternoon. Josiah Issam was one of three suspects seen fleeing the scene after the shooting of Saul Luz Murillo, age 25, according to a Midland Police Department Facebook post. MPD officers responded to the 500 block of South Carver Street at 3:45 p.m. Saturday and found Murillo, who had two gunshot wounds. Malik Jamal Jaquari Gordon, age 21, was arrested Monday in connection with the case and charged with murder. He is being held on $1 million bond. Anyone with information in reference to the whereabouts of Issam is encouraged to contact MPD immediately at 685-7108 or Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS in reference to case number 19122-8024 to remain anonymous.
Hello, this is Cindy reading Faith and Philanthropy from the MRT for Friday, January 3rd. Daily prayer can increase satisfaction and self-worth. Commentary by John Stark, special to the Washington Post. Many Americans set out to establish their identity by following desire and ambition. Individual freedom, self-determination, and self-expression are our highest good. This is the cultural air we breathe. The problem is it often doesn't work out the way we had hoped. Traditions, religions, received wisdom, and social ties, like family and community, have historically been the meaning-building things of life, as author Judith Shulevitz puts it. But these aren't how we find meaning anymore. We are pressured to find meaning and significance in our accomplishments and careers more than ever. It's not working more that's wearing us out. It's that we are expecting more out of our work. It's not meant to provide inner stability and meaning. Shulevitz cites studies in her book, The Sabbath World, Glimpses of a Different Order of Time. In 1991, the economist Juliet Shore advanced the now conventional thesis that global competition forced Americans to toil longer and rest less. She based this on rough estimates that people gave during interviews with U.S. census takers over three decades. Meanwhile, two sociologists, John Robinson and Jeffrey Godby, were asking people to fill out time diaries, noting exactly how much time they spent on each activity of the day right after they had done it. They concluded that Americans work less than they did in the 1960s. How do you reconcile what people said with what their time diaries showed? You acknowledge that Americans feel more pressed for time, whether they're working harder or not, Shulevitz writes. Writer Sophie Gilbert explains how millennials have experienced burnout from what she calls competitive individualism amplified by social media. They are more likely to be perfectionists and therefore more likely to be depressed, anxious, unhappy, and dissatisfied with themselves. She says modern adults have constructed flimsy charades of identities based on what they think other people will want. They want to prove that their lives are things to be admired, and that their homes, vacations, children, closets all function as projections of their best selves, organized, attractive, authentic, unattainable. She defines competitive individualism as the performance of the self being more important than the reality. In other words, our sense of self is fragile. This is no way to form an identity and find meaning. But unless you are completely disconnected and siloed from any consumption of cultural goods, media, entertainment, public education, etc., this is how you've been formed to find your way in this world, whether consciously or subconsciously. I want to suggest a different path that's much older, prayer. Does that surprise you? I've discovered the practice of prayer unlocks resources to provide a deep experience of meaning and significance. It is the context where we find the durable identity to persevere each season of life. Recently, I spoke with Mark Pagan of the podcast Other Men Need Help about male friendship, and he asked me what experience of friendship I would want to take into the next life. I told him that as a pastor, it's hard to be vulnerable, and most of us feel an inordinate pressure to never show weakness. I experienced a long season of depression in 2015. I remember sitting in a dinner with a close friend, sharing my inability to shake it. I was half expecting him to distance himself and give me some well-meaning encouragement that would end our meeting. Instead, he leaned in and listened. He asked probing questions. He demonstrated love. It was one of those moments where it was safe to fall apart with another person. I could just be myself and be loved. And that's the experience I want to take into the next life. Christianity teaches it can be experienced in this one as well, and prayer is the regular context for it. While our modern world clamors to build an identity through performance, accomplishments, and becoming what we think other people will want, Christianity teaches us that we can receive a deep identity. The regular rhythm of prayer is being yourself and being loved by God. It's the otherworldly experience of being weak, but received into His transcendence. I encourage you to experience being received not for adapting to what others think you ought to be, but simply because God loves you. That's called grace. The presence of God is a safe place to fall apart and be needy. In a world of performance, it's a renewal. St. Augustine tells us that humans have infinite desires. We're actually made for infinite, transcendent things. When asked how to make sense of our ecological crisis, author Wendell Berry remarked that it shouldn't surprise us since humans have infinite desires and our Earth has limited resources. We have infinite desires, so it's no wonder we find ourselves with fragile and frustrated identities, since we have been looking to fulfill these desires in finite, limited things like work, accomplishments, and being received by our peers. The practice of prayer is how humans with infinite desires meet God, who is infinite fullness. The new year can be a time to reorient how we seek God's fullness and joy. There is much to learn about prayer, but it's easy to get started. Begin by reading Psalms in the Bible and see how believers have prayed and what they've prayed for. Read a book on prayer. Find a community of faith and see how they pray and what they seek. Christians often come to prayer not knowing what to say, whether because of suffering, weariness, or feeling distant from God. That's okay. God, who is our help, invites us just to be present. He tells us not to expect to be received for many words, but because we are loved. John Stark is the lead pastor at Apostles Church Uptown in New York City. Midland County Public Library to host grant writing workshop. U.S. Census Bureau specialist will discuss using census data by Rich Lopez. With this census year, numbers can be crucial for nonprofits when deadlines for grants loom. Case statements that feature statistics on a variety of demographics can help with setting up new programs or improving existing ones. The Midland County Public Library Downtown Branch will host U.S. Census Bureau Specialist Susanna Privett for a workshop on using that data to help with getting up-to-date information for grants. Grant writers always make a case for community needs, and those statistics can help make it passable, said Megan Buck, the MCPL's Social Impact and Community Engagement Coordinator. During the workshop, which is geared toward nonprofit professionals, Privett will discuss the best practices for finding and using census data on population increases, poverty, housing, and more to assess those needs. Buck said that even those who aren't responsible for grant writing but work in the nonprofit sector can benefit from attending. The library is offering this workshop for free, so I hope some will come and listen. I think it could be as beneficial to anyone who is planning new programming or nonprofit executives to see how this information can better their organization, she said. The workshop is from 1 to 4 p.m. Wednesday in the community room at the downtown branch, 301 West Missouri Avenue. Midland County Public Library will have computers available in March for residents to use to answer the census packet questions. Genesis Conference planned for Odessa. Die Mission Ministries, headquartered in Delta, Colorado, will host Genesis Conference, planned for January 10th, at Emmett HaTorah in Odessa. The conference is held to promote unity among the area's Messianic and Hebrew roots believers. The event is free and open to people of other faiths. The conference centers on discussion of the Book of Genesis and how it connects to other scripture. The Erev Sabbath celebration will feature dancing, live music, an oneg, kosher potluck meal, and guest speakers. Prayers for the sick, mikvahs, ritual immersion baths, and baptisms will all be part of the conference. Emmett HaTorah is located at 3319 North Golder Avenue. The conference will begin at 6 p.m. Although the event is free, donations will be accepted. Die Mission Ministries is a ministerial alliance of Messianic Jewish, Hebrew roots, and traditional Christian congregations dedicated to facilitating and maintaining the spiritual unity of the Judeo-Christian faith community. For more information about the conference, visit DAIMission.org. Volunteer opportunities. Basin Dream Center for Orphans is forming a public relations committee. Volunteers are needed to connect with area shelters, soup kitchens, and food banks for potential residents in its program. The committee would staff booths at area events to hand out information and visit churches in Midland and Odessa to answer questions about the center. Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale needs volunteers to assist with its annual fundraiser. Volunteers will usher and help with food service. You will also be able to enjoy a concert by the nationally touring trio, Take Three. The event is 7:30 p.m. January 16th at Midland Community Theater. United Way has a volunteer opportunity for those who can't get out of the office during the day. Velo is a project designed to support children's reading skills and to increase volunteer opportunities for professionals. Velo volunteers can work from any device anywhere. It's an interactive one-on-one online tutoring program that connects local classrooms to volunteers in a safe online environment. With the support of a virtual volunteer, students can read and complete activities to build reading skills and strengthen comprehensive literacy. The West Texas Recording Library needs volunteers to read daily newspapers and other written media. Dedicated to improving the lives of people who cannot access the printed word, the Recording Library of West Texas offers audio versions of different forms of media to the visually impaired. From audio version books and audio version magazines to audio version newspapers and newsletters, the library helps people in the community stay connected and better their lives. Volunteers must be over the age of 16 and able to dedicate a minimum of 2 hours a week on their own schedule. Legacy Scholar and SIP hours are available. The mission and goal of Faith Kitchen Ministries is to help fight hunger by supplying emergency food assistance to those in need. On every third Friday in August, the Friday before the third Saturday, volunteers are needed to unload food deliveries in the food pantry, stock shelves, and set up the food pantry for distributions. On every third Saturday, volunteers assist guests with shopping in the food pantry and, if needed, help clients to their vehicles. Obituaries and death notices from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, January 3rd. Doran Neal McLeod departed this world for his heavenly home on January 1st. Neal began the new year and eternity with his beloved parents, Clarence and Dolly Odessa McLeod, brothers Marvin and wife Elizabeth, Carl and wife Nelda, sisters Paul Fay Bird and husband Leonard, and Bertha Dells and husband Frankie, and a host of beloved family awaiting him. He was born the youngest of five children on July 13, 1929. Neal is survived by his wife of 68 years, Laverne, his children Kyle McLeod and wife Livona of Midland, Bobby McLeod and wife Melinda of Joshua, and Vicky McLeod, Joyce, and husband Hal of San Angelo, six grandchildren, 21 precious great-grandchildren, and several beloved nieces and nephews. Graveside services will be at Glen Rest Cemetery in Big Lake on Saturday, January 4th at 3:30 p.m., with Jill Fulham officiating. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that memorials be given to the Alzheimer's Association or your charity of choice. Family and friends can send online condolences at www.harper-funeralhome.com. Edna Fields was born on January 12, 1937, in Limestone County, Texas, to the late Henry Archie and Idina Massey. She was preceded in death by her parents, first husband Nathaniel Norman, second husband James Fields, and a total of 13 siblings, of which 11 survived. Six brothers, Henry Archie, Nehemiah Archie, Rufus Archie, Joseph Archie, E.J. Archie, Babe Ruth Archie, and five sisters, Beatrice Jackson, Elnora Robinson, Ruby Archie, Inez West, and Idina Williams. Edna is survived by her three children, two daughters, Shirley Jones and husband Freddie of Midland, Fonda Carpio of Odessa, one son, Willie McGee of Dallas, six grandchildren, and a host of great-grandchildren, nieces, nephews, cousins, and friends. Saul Luz Murillo was tragically taken from us on Saturday, December 28. Saul Luz Murillo, 25, was born September 23, 1994, in Midland, to Cruz Murillo and the late Belinda Andrade Murillo. Saul was preceded in death by his mother, his grandmother Maria Raquel Murillo, and his great-grandparents Alfredo and Ramona Patino. He is survived by his father and stepmother, Cruz and Edwina Murillo, two brothers, Jose Bucco Cruz Murillo Jr. and Joshua Allen Henderson Jr., four sisters, Rita Marie Sainz, Mia Sarah Herrera, Madeline Renee Murillo, and Maria Raquel Murillo, two stepbrothers, Joseph A. Galindo and Joshua A. Galindo, grandfather Ezekiel Murillo and a grandmother, Rita Andrade, four nieces, numerous uncles, aunts, cousins, and friends. Viewing will be Saturday, January 4th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, January 5th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Chapel. Graveside service is set for Monday, January 6th at 10 a.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.heavenlygatefh.com. Shirley W. Rogers of Midland passed away peacefully on December 29th at age 83. Born February 18, 1936, in Dixon, Tennessee, to Willard Moss and Helen Aline Edwards Chumley. Shirley is survived by her husband Jimmy Rogers, daughters Karen Rogers, Susan Rogers Smith and her husband M. Scott Smith, 5 grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren. Shirley was predeceased by her parents, Willard Moss and Helen Aline Edwards Chumley, sister Neville Jean Schlichting, and son Michael J. Rogers. Graveside services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 4th, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorial donations be made to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas 79701, or a charity of your choice. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Virginia Jenny Brantley Smith, 90, of Knoxville, Tennessee, passed away on Friday, December 27th, at Avenir Care Center, surrounded by her loving family. Jenny was born on February 5th, 1929, to Guy and Lillian Brantley in Abilene. She was preceded in death by husband Ray C. Smith, who helped her raise 4 boys, and husband Robert W. Smith, whom she married later in life, her parents Royal Guy and Lillian Moore Brantley, her brother Royal G. Brantley, Jr., and her son R. Scott Smith. She is survived by 3 sons, Kenneth Smith and wife Cindy of Midland, Rob Smith and wife Kathy of Knoxville, Zach Brantley and wife Aurelia of Knoxville, 10 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces and nephews. Interment will be held Tuesday, January 7th at 1 p.m. at the Central Texas State Veterans Cemetery in Killeen, with a reception to follow at Cook Walden Davis Funeral Home in Georgetown. Online condolences can be made at www.dignitymemorial.com. Faye Markham, 83, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, January 1st, surrounded by her family. The family will receive friends from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Sunday, January 5th, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Monday, January 6th, at Midland Church of God. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. She is survived by 2 sons, Steve and Mike Markham. History of put-downs causes broken trust between in-laws. Dear Abby for Friday. Dear Abby, I have been happily married to my darling husband for 20 years. The problem is his sister. When we first met, she asked my husband if I was for real, because I'm very outgoing and affectionate. In the early years, and until about 6 years ago, she would berate me with abusive criticism. In most instances, her comments were inaccurate. If I tried to overlook her actions and have a good relationship, she would soon find something else to criticize. I am normally an "it's history" kind of person when it comes to confrontations and forget them quickly. Thankfully, her abuse has finally stopped, but I'm now having trust issues because every time in the past, when I let my guard down to mend the relationship, she'd lash out and put me down again. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Wary in Texas. Dear Wary, one would think that during the time your sister-in-law was sniping at you, your darling husband would have stepped in and told his sister to put her knives away. After suffering through 14 years of her emotional battery, it's no wonder you have trust issues where she is concerned. Intelligent person that you are, it's likely you always will have them, so stop blaming yourself for it. Continue being the outgoing and affectionate person you have always been, and keep your guard up, because that's what healthy people have to do when dealing with someone like her. Dear Abby, I love my wonderful neighbors of 28 years. They are 10 years younger than my parents. They have been like a second set of parents to me. My concern is for their health. They are in their 60s and 70s, but neither one goes to the doctor. The wife went 20-plus years ago and decided never to return after they prescribed diabetes and blood pressure medication for her. More recently, she can no longer leave the house because she has injured her arthritic knee so badly. She refuses to get it checked and claims it will heal. She diagnosed herself via Dr. Google. Her intelligent adult daughter is aware of all of this. I know this is a choice people make, but at this point I'm sure it's just anxiety that is keeping her from getting the medical help she needs. She's missing her garden, her grandchildren, and grocery shopping, so I'm sure she doesn't want to spend the rest of her life like this. Her husband has no influence either and is picking up what she can no longer do. I've tried encouraging her to seek advice, but haven't pushed her so hard as to push her away. What should I do? Scared for them in Massachusetts. Dear Scared, if anyone could do anything, it would have to be the woman's husband and her daughter. I assume you have pointed out to your neighbor that with medical help she could heal more quickly, and also that there is something called preventive medicine that can help people avoid becoming seriously ill. Because you have talked until you are blue in the face and still haven't been able to get through, my advice is to love her while you have her.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Friday, January 3rd. Sheriff surprised at low DWIs. New Year's Eve sweep resulted in couple dozen arrests. The story was written by Royal McGregor. In a concerted effort on New Year's Eve, the Odessa Police Department, Ector County Sheriff's Office, and Texas Department of Public Safety collaborated to deter people from drinking and driving. ECSO posted on its Facebook at 8:10 p.m. Tuesday that all law enforcement agencies would be out in full force. That post received more than 1,200 likes, 250 comments, and was shared 2,400 times. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said during a phone interview on Thursday afternoon, those efforts on New Year's Eve proved beneficial, but he was shocked by the number of people charged with driving while intoxicated and public intoxication. Quote, I was surprised it was that low, Griffiths said. We had probably the largest operation with the most officers out on any New Year's Eve ever in Ector County. I've been telling people there are going to be more officers out on New Year's Eve than ever. End quote. Griffiths sent a text message that detailed OPD, ECSO, and DPS charged 23 people with driving while intoxicated arrests and 9 with public intoxication. OPD and DPS each charged 10 people with driving while intoxicated, while University of Texas Permian Basin Police had 3. OPD charged 8 people with public intoxication, while ECSO had 1. The Odessa Police Department made a total of 29 arrests between December 31st and January 1st, including 14 DWI arrests. A news release said there are still 7 more ongoing investigations as a result of the operation. OPD also responded to 81 firework-related calls, 13 shots-fired calls, and 36 disturbance calls. Griffiths said the numbers of driving while intoxicated and public intoxication arrests can mimic a regular weekend in Odessa and Ector County. Quote, it's actually a lot lower than I expected, Griffiths said. On any given Friday and Saturday night, it's not uncommon for us to have 40 to 50 people to come in. I expected the same for New Year's Eve. End quote. One figure that Griffiths said warmed his heart was that, to his knowledge, there were no fatality accidents on New Year's Eve. According to Safewise, Texas ranks in the top 10 for most drunk driving deaths. Texas is 8th with 5.01 impaired driving deaths per 100,000 people. The states ahead of Texas are number 1, Montana, 7.44, Number 2, Wyoming, 5.89. Number 3, South Carolina, 5.72. Number 4, Mississippi, 5.46. Number 5, New Mexico, 5.15. Number 6, South Dakota, 5.10. And Alabama, 5.03. Quote, "The ultimate goal is to save lives," Griffiths said. "We just need to educate the public on the dangers and the expense. A lot of times the intoxicated person in an accident is the least injured. I would rather have us have zero DWIs and have no fatalities than arrest 20, 30, 40 people in an evening. It's all about education and getting the word across. There are so many other options." End quote. Texas law protecting armed churchgoers draws national attention. This was written by Abigail Hausloner, Deanna Paul, and Kim Belware from the Washington Post via the Texas Tribune. Top Texas officials on Monday cited the actions of several armed churchgoers who subdued a gunman in their sanctuary this weekend as a model of how Americans should protect themselves from potential mass shooters. The attack, after which two church members and the gunman were dead, came 2 years after the Texas legislature passed a law that authorized anyone with a concealed carry license to bring their weapon into houses of worship. That law was a response to the 2017 attack on a church in Sutherland Springs that left 26 people dead before a local resident shot the gunman outside the building and forced him to flee. The shooter, who attacked West Freeway Church of Christ in White Settlement, a suburb of Fort Worth, on Sunday, was killed by a single shot from church member Jack Wilson, a former reserve sheriff's deputy and Army veteran. Wilson, who owns a shooting range in nearby Granbury, said he started training fellow members to be a part of the church's volunteer security team when it launched after the Texas law passed. Quote, "If there was any church in the state, in America, that was prepared for this, it was this church," Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, a Republican, said at a news conference Monday. Continuing the quote, "They had done their training, and I think that you could see it in the results," end quote. He credited the new law with making the armed congregants' quick responses possible, calling it a model of what other churches and other places of business need to focus on. President Donald Trump weighed in Monday evening, tweeting that the attack, quote, "was over in 6 seconds, thanks to the brave parishioners who acted to protect 242 fellow worshipers. Lives were saved by these heroes and Texas laws allowing them to carry arms," end quote. But other state leaders took issue with Trump and Paxton's interpretation of the incident. Former Texas congressman and one-time presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke said the shooting was a reflection of the state's lax gun control measures. Quote, "Our representatives in Texas have left us open to these kinds of attacks," he tweeted. "Time to change our representatives," end quote. Gun control activists called out the rate of firearm-related homicides and suicides in Texas, which ranks in the middle of the pack nationally for gun deaths, according to federal data. Quote, "If more guns and fewer gun laws made Texas safer, it would be the safest state in the U.S., tweeted Shannon Watts, founder of Moms Demand Action. Instead, it has high rates of gun suicide and homicide and is home to 4 of the 10 deadliest mass shootings," end quote. The shooter, whom authorities identified as 43-year-old Keith Thomas Kanunen, fatally shot 2 members of the church's volunteer security team, both men in their 60s, during the Sunday service before Wilson fired back at him, officials said. During a vigil Monday evening, Senior Minister Brett Farmer said he had encountered Kanunin at the church before. Quote, "I had seen him. I had visited with him. I had given him food. I had offered him food at other occasions he had been to our building," he said. A video of the attack, captured by the church's live stream camera, shows the gunman sitting in a pew during the service before the shooting. He stands up and paces briefly before he speaks to another churchgoer and pulls a large gun from his coat at about 10:50 a.m. He then fires toward the man he spoke to, striking him and another man standing nearby as other congregants scream and dive beneath the pews. The video then shows a fourth man, apparently Wilson, shoot the gunman. At least four congregants with weapons raised rushed toward the attacker, who had fallen to the ground. The two victims were taken to a hospital, but soon died of their injuries. The Texas Department of Public Safety identified the men as Anton Wallace, age 64, of Fort Worth, and Richard White, age 67, of River Oaks. Quote, "We have lost some great men, but so many other lives could have been lost," Farmer said at the vigil Monday. "I love this community. I love this church. I love this state, and I love our country, and I love our freedoms. And I'm not going to let evil take that away," end quote. Footage of the shooting has been removed from the church YouTube page, though it continues to circulate through social media platforms. The FBI is working with local and state authorities to investigate the shooting. Paxton said investigators are uncertain of the gunman's motive and are searching for people who knew the shooter. Kanunin, who had previous arrests for alleged assault, theft, and possession of an illegal weapon, appeared to be, quote, "more of a loner," end quote. It is probably going to be very difficult to determine what his motivations were, other than maybe mental illness, Paxton said. Authorities say Kanunin may have been transient and might have visited the church several times. Quote, "Unfortunately, this country has seen so many of these that we've actually gotten used to it at this point," Jeff Williams, the regional director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, told reporters Monday. Continuing the quote, "It's tragic, and it's a terrible situation, especially during the holiday season," end quote. A spokesperson for the West Freeway Church of Christ and Farmer's family declined Monday to address the church's security practices. It is unclear whether the church screens people who carry guns into the building. Farmer recently self-published a work of fiction set in the Texas Hill Country about an attack on the United States by Muslim terrorists, an event he writes in the book's introduction that he hopes, quote, "never comes to pass, but there is always that possibility," end quote. As the story begins, a group of Texas ranchers worry forebodingly about the presence of terrorists in the United States. Later, as an Islamic State flag is hoisted atop the Empire State Building, they are glad to have stockpiled guns and ammunition. Quote, "guns needed now," the main character thinks, as the crisis gets underway. Before the new law, gun owners in Texas could not carry weapons into a house of worship without specific authorization from church leadership. The Sutherland Springs attack spurred Texas lawmakers and a Republican-controlled legislature to loosen the state's gun laws so that they could do so more easily. While there is no specific law that allows armed volunteers in places of worship, members of a congregation can use their concealed carry license to protect their religious community, said South Texas College of Law at Houston professor Josh Blackman. Houses of worship and other businesses in Texas are still legally authorized to ban firearms on their premises. But in September, another law went into effect requiring a house of worship to post a sign stating it is opting out before it can prohibit licensed individuals from carrying weapons inside. Conservative politicians and gun rights advocates credited the looser gun laws with saving lives. Quote, "The brave officers from the White Settlement Police Department were on the scene in less than 2 minutes, but these men who had volunteered for the church security team had already secured their church," Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, a Republican, said in a statement. The National Rifle Association renewed its Good Guy with a Gun defense of looser firearms restrictions in a Sunday tweet praising the armed churchgoers' actions, a defense that gun control group Newtown Action Alliance called a myth, noting that Wilson was highly trained. Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican from Texas, and Texas Governor Greg Abbott, also a Republican, praised the armed response. Paxton added Monday, quote, "We can't prevent every incident, we can't prevent mental illness from occurring, and we can't prevent every crazy person from pulling a gun. But you can be prepared like this church was," end quote. Paul reported from New York and Belware reported from Chicago. Alex Horton and Alice Kreitz in Washington contributed to this story. This story was first published by the Texas Tribune. The Texas Tribune is proud to celebrate 10 years of exceptional journalism for an exceptional state. These are Odessa American Quick Hits. Sand Hills Stock Show and Rodeo has scheduled Junior Livestock Sale of Champions, a night of personal interaction with top animals and kids at 5 p.m. Saturday at the Ector County Coliseum, Barn G, 4201 Andrews Highway. There will be a complimentary prime rib dinner prepared by Barn Door, exhibitor sale of champions, parade of champions, and rodeo performance. RSVP is required. To RSVP or to purchase tickets, contact Katie at dayshowcattle.com. Rays of Hope Children's Grief Center is a community outreach of Hospice of Midland. The center serves children and adolescents aged 4 to 18 years who have experienced a loss due to death, divorce, separation, incarceration, deployment, foster care, or other painful transition. All services are provided free of charge. For more information, call 684-5437. Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Sacred Scripts, 1,000 Years of Religious Texts Exhibition through February 23rd. This exhibition will be a comprehensive view of how religious texts stand as art objects and the progression of that vehicle over time from early medieval manuscripts through the invention of the printing press to mass-produced contemporary religious texts and rare artist books. Religious texts showcased include the Torah, Bible, Quran, Ramayana, and Pali Canon. For more information, call 550-9696. This is a state news roundup. Police in Texas say they are searching for a suspect after two men were fatally shot during a fight inside a Lubbock nightclub early New Year's Day. Police say the two killed were 17-year-old Carionte Shepherd and 24-year-old Dedrick Traylor. Police say Traylor and the suspect had a physical altercation inside the club when the suspect pulled a firearm and shot him. Police say Shepherd was running from the scene when he was shot. No one else was injured. Police are asking anyone with information about the shooting to contact them. A report that police in Temple, Texas, filed with the state attorney general said a man who was fatally shot last month by an officer did not have a weapon. Police have released little information since the December 2nd shooting in Temple, about 70 miles northeast of Austin. Police have said Officer Carmen DeCruz fatally shot 28-year-old Michael Dean, but haven't said what led DeCruz to open fire. The report does say the shooting happened during a traffic stop. Temple Police spokesman Cody Weems said in a statement Tuesday that police are required to file the report with the Attorney General's office within 30 days of an incident. He said that because police currently have, quote, only limited information from sources that do not have firsthand knowledge of the facts, end quote, the form might be revised later. DeCruz was placed on paid administrative leave after the shooting. American Airlines said Thursday it is negotiating with Boeing Corporation over compensation for the airline's grounded planes and will share some of the proceeds with its employees. American had 24 Boeing 737 MAX jets when the planes were grounded worldwide in March after two deadly crashes. Like other airlines, American has canceled thousands of flights as a result. It estimated that the grounding will cut its full-year 2019 pre-tax income by $540 million. A spokesman for American said Thursday that the airline is talking to Boeing, quote, as to what that compensation looks like, end quote. Boeing has suggested that compensation could be in cash or other forms, such as help with training or spare parts. American expects to make part of the compensation eligible for employee profit sharing, the spokesman said, without providing any figures. American Airlines Group Incorporated CEO Doug Parker said in October he was confident that any losses due to the MAX grounding, quote, won't be incurred by American shareholders, but will be borne by the Boeing shareholders, end quote. Boeing has reached partial settlements with Southwest Airlines and Turkish Airlines, neither carrier disclosed details, while continuing to negotiate with others. Chicago-based Boeing has estimated the cost at $5.6 billion over several years. The Federal Aviation Administration would have to approve Boeing's changes to the MAX before the planes can fly in the U.S. Regulators in other countries plan to conduct their own reviews. A man who was killed when a gunman opened fire at a Texas church was remembered at a funeral on Thursday. Governor Greg Abbott was among those in attendance for the private funeral of 67-year-old Richard White, who was one of two congregants killed Sunday when a man with a shotgun opened fire inside West Freeway Church of Christ in the Fort Worth area town of White Settlement. Jack Wilson, who like White was a member of the church's armed volunteer security team, fatally shot the attacker, Keith Thomas Kanunen. Wilson has said White was reaching for his gun when he was killed. Thursday's service was held at the Western Hills Church of Christ in Fort Worth, which is located near the West Freeway Church. After the funeral, Abbott said he was, quote, so proud of what White did to step up and help his fellow Texans. There were people in that congregation today, alive today, because Rich stood in the breach and protected others from harm's way, the governor said. Also killed in the attack was congregant Anton Tony Wallace, who had been serving communion.
That's the end of the first hour of the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American. We'll begin our second hour right after we take a look at weather.